You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 84. Friday the 13th, Steve. We're hoping for good luck, though, as we're into draft season. More draft talk. What else would we want to talk about in the dead of winter? I know I got a nice little Mexico trip on the docket, Steve, but we'll talk about weather and all that boring stuff. But today, a great episode where we're talking about two of the drafts that we've been in. It's almost like a draft recap show, but we'll definitely use it as a way to talk about the landscape, some trends we're seeing, some different names that we like, what worked for us, what didn't work for us. It's going to be a great show, everybody. Thank you for joining us. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I am at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We love having you guys with us and would really appreciate if you guys go out to Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a rating and a review. It goes a long way for us. So, Steve, with that said, draft season well underway. I feel like we got a little pep in our step, and we finally got some guys that we know we will have a vested interest in this year. How's it going, man? How's draft season going?
It's great. It's off to a great start. I know we've mentioned on the show before, and like a tips and tricks type of thing. Like the best way to prep for drafts is to do like draft and holds or early drafts, and that's kind of what we're doing. Like I'm treating this, obviously I'm taking this draft seriously. It's the one league I have. We'll get into the details in a second, but it's a league that's paid there. There's guys in the industry in the league, so it's competitive. It's not that I'm not taking it seriously, but hey, it's my first draft of the year. Like I'm going to use it as much of a learning lesson as possible too. And I think it's better than doing mocks or even just, looking at ADP sort of things. Like there's no better way to prepare for a draft than drafting. And, we kind of did it for you, right? Like it could be a cheat sheet if you haven't done any drafts yet. So it's great to get one under the belt and to sort of get a feel for what it's like to be in a competitive room. So it's nice, and I think that we can apply a lot of lesson learned and sort of what to expect going forward as we get into like February and March, which will be like the peak of draft season. I know TGFBI will sneak up on us soon. I think that takes place like the end of February. So, I know we still are in a bit of a cold period here in January, but once these next 2 weeks are over, like that's it, man. Like we're going to have to go. Like most drafts are going to be starting in February or towards the end of it. And I know Nick has mentioned it to like the Pitcherless staff, Nick Pollock, obviously. It's a normal off season. Like we're not waiting on free agents or anything because of a lockout. Right. So it's going to be the first normal off season with like a proper draft season without any question marks due to COVID or a lockout or whatever, since 2019. So it might be hard to get back into that groove, right? Like I remember, back before things and the world was turned upside down, right? The off season just seems so long and you were waiting for it to happen. And like now that these last few years took place, there was so much going on and it can kind of sneak up on you now that it's like back to normal. Right. So I think it's good to get as much prep in as possible. And the fact that we're doing this in January and have done drafts, and I know you're almost done with your 50 round draft and hold. I think there could be a lot that we could apply for this as we get to the thick of things.
Yeah, I actually, right as you were rapping there, Steve, had my little chime of the, I call it the airplane chime, because I'm now on the clock for round 45 of my 50 that I'm doing on NFBC. But yeah, everything you said is spot on. And it's almost like glass half empty, half full with the normal off season, because in other seasons for Wins Above Fantasy, we've had stuff to talk about with like the lockout or like, this late wave of free agents. And now we all kind of were tweeting about it a month or two ago, but it was like, there's not that many free agents left. Mm-hmm. And outside of Carlos Correa's fifth team he signs with, you know, we might have an 8-week run period here of, you know, thank God we have drafts, right? Because it kind of gets us going. Spring training, of course, we'll have nothing short on topics. And as always, if you guys want to email the show, we'll be more than happy to throw a topic on the rundown, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com for that plug. But yeah, it's definitely playing for keeps at this point when you do a draft and you get that excitement of, you know, it's like the endorphin release when you actually draft a guy and you're like, all right, in the next 9 months, we're going to be riding together. And then on the flip side, when you get around like pick 150, you start looking at the board and you're like, oh man, like a lot of the top guys are gone. Like now I got to shift, get into the deep mode. So all that is kind of the schoolboy in me talking, just the excitement of fantasy baseball, but we're going to roll up the sleeves, Steve. So yeah, I'm pumped for this show.
And it's a two-sided coin doing a draft this early. Cause right. Like, you know, America's sleepers and like the sleepers that aren't really sleepers haven't shot up draft boards yet.
Yep.
So there's a lot of value to be had and, you know, guys can fall and people haven't done the full extent of their research or even got into full fantasy baseball mode for, you know, the masses to fall in love with a, you know, Aaron Ashby from last year or, you know, a Shane McClanahan to make his, you know, a rise in stock or like a Julio Rodriguez. But there's also not as much information and mistakes to be had. And, you know, we've talked about how ADP is really based on draft and holds at this point. So, you know, it might not, it's harder to make those decisions in draft rooms, but there's also value to be had. So I enjoy drafting at this point because of that value, but it's also, I think, harder to do just because, you know, we haven't had the time to dive into everybody and, you know, Nick hasn't put out his updated list of pitchers or, you know, whoever's rankings or sleepers that you usually follow. So, but yeah, as that information comes out, everybody sees it and the values change.
Yeah, there is a reality that so there, you know, I mean, fantasy baseball Twitter, it is a thing. It is, you know, a movement out there and it can run the risk of groupthink. And like you said, it's like, drafting right now is kind of a gift and a curse because, you know, you might be able to get ahead of some of those trends, but then whether it's injuries or, you know, position battles in spring training or just somebody tearing the cover off the ball in spring training, you know, we obviously don't have that information. So we will get into all of it and we're excited. Kind of our rundown here, the agenda, folks, is talking through some themes, takeaways at the high levels. We'll talk about kind of how Steve and I each in separate drafts attacked position scarcity or did not attack position scarcity. Talk about, you know, kind of some guys that we felt good about getting. You know, I don't think we need to spell out every player that we picked across our entire rosters, but we'll do kind of the quick recap and then we'll make sure that we definitely get in deeper on a few guys that we really liked where we got them. And also knowing that we've been talking strategy, Steve, on what we want, you know, New Year's resolutions, all those things, we can get into kind of the strategy we felt worked for us. And then knowing that this is draft one, it's kind of the guinea pig, talk about what didn't work out, whether it was our own doing or the draft room kind of got away from us. So it's going to be great. But Steve, why don't you start by just kind of, you know, hitting the housekeeping on what format your league was. I'll do the same and then we can jump in.
So funny enough, it was a podcast listener league run by our podcast boss, Adam Howe at Pitcher List. Shout out to Adam. This is the second year he's doing it. It's the On the Wire listener league. I think there's going to be a lot more leagues this year. I think there was like 15 or so last year, maybe 12 to 15, something like that. And I mean, I'm in On the Wire listener league 3. So on January 5th, there's already been 3 leagues. So there should be a lot more this year. Shout out to league 3. There's a few big names in there. Mike Carter of Fantrax, Adam Howe. Lucky enough, I'm in a league with him. I know his partner, Kevin Hastings from On the Wire, is in some of the leagues too. Art Tornabene of Triple Play, Royal Report Kev of Pitcher List. So a bunch of guys in the industry. Yeah, it's a fun league. We had a great chat on Twitter going during it. So a lot of sharp guys, which I was grateful for because, you know, it's not just a league that you join and sort of mess around. And then obviously all the listeners, if you're listening to the weekly On the Wire podcast, you know what you're doing. So, but as far as the format, it's like the standard NFBC format, like 12 team, 5x5, weekly fab with weekly moves. You can move your hitters on Fridays, 30 roster spots, 7 of those are bench, 2 catchers. So it mimics like TGFBI, the main event. So as clear cut as you can get for NFBC drafts. So that was the actual draft I was in. It finished up, I think, 2 or 3 days ago. And I had the 10th pick, which was, you know, a slot that we talked about on previous shows. You know, I want to be to the middle to late part of the draft, maybe a little bit later than I want. I kind of, you know, like that 6 to 8 range probably best. But don't tell anyone I forgot to do my KDS and choose the order. So that was just 1 to 10, and I got 10.
Nice. Yeah, on my side, I'm just doing a NFBC 50. I think most listeners this time of year are probably familiar, but it's just kind of a basic league on NFBC 5x5. I think what's most unique about it is that it's a 50-man draft, and then there are no free agent moves the entire year. So you really got to plan for kind of your depth and, 23 starters and 27 men on the bench. So it goes pretty deep, and you got to have kind of a plan for that, which we'll get into. But similar to you, Steve, 2 catcher, middle infield, corner infield, and 5 outfield, which is a bit of a challenge this year, or at least I found.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll get into that. And and you do have to set your lineup, right? It's not is it a best ball or
correct? You do have to set your lineup.
Yes, NFBC 50s. And it's $50, right? 50 roster spots, $50, right?
That's kind of the
NFBC 50s. Yeah, cool. It's a great format. I definitely want to do one of those, and probably that will be my next draft that we do. I know we mentioned the Gladiators last week, but that actually format is done for the year. They're not doing it anymore until 2024. But we'll definitely do one of those next year.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, it's a good balance. Like, it's no fab. You set your lineups, but it's not too much of an upkeep. I know that you know a lot of us, especially us in the industry, always talk about how, you know, as much as we love the game, it's overwhelming when you're in too many leagues. So NFBC 50s are a nice little in between, right, where you don't have to worry about fab or anything like that. You just got to remember to set your lineups, which you're doing that anyway. If you're in any NFBC leagues, you could just check one more lineup to start your players for the week, which isn't too bad.
Yeah, you've got your guys that are either going to take you there or not, and it's a matter of just putting them in. There is an overall, which is a free main event entry for next year. Which
oh, nice!
Is
like that's awesome. Yeah,
$1,750 on $1,700 of value for a main event entry. So there's a slight element of kind of swinging for the fences, so to speak, but for the most part, yeah, it's just a nice it's a level
maybe
up.
Maybe year 5 of WAF we'll have to do a main event there. If there's anything that would, I know we always talk about how we love our home leagues, but if there's anything that would
Trump
or at least, you know, we'd be texting more often than we already do about our home leagues together. It would be the main event, which would be a ton of fun. But maybe 1 year that could be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, you know, we'll either do a GoFundMe or you know, the ad revenue will really help us get there, which is my nice segue, because we're going to talk about the players we attacked for position scarcity. But first, we're going to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, let's jump in here. Position scarcity. I know throughout the offseason, kind of the big trends are that shortstop is deep, We know that we like kind of the depth of starting pitchers, but in terms of the positions that are pretty scarce, third base, first base is a little top heavy, second, outfield, catcher, a lot of positions, to be honest. So talk to me a little bit about how you kind of approached your draft and how you're feeling about it.
Yeah, before I get into the position, that an actual position scarcity or, like, you know, different positions that I targeted, it was just a general vibe. And I don't know if you felt the same thing, but around round five or six, six or seven, a little bit later.
Yes.
I sitting in the draft room, I wanted to take a hitter. I really did. But there was just no one that I was, like, not afraid, almost afraid to take. Like,
you have to reach. Yeah. There's
right.
There was 15 pitchers out of 20 ADP slots or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found myself just taking pitchers. I went pitcher in round six, seven, and eight, just because I didn't feel comfortable taking O'Neill Cruz in the sixth round. Trevor Story, obviously the news didn't come out at the time that was taken, but same sort of thing. Corbin Carroll, I could have talked myself into, but, you know, that early for a guy who's had, 125 to 150 plate appearances so far, basically 1 month of plate appearances. I like Teoscar Hernandez a lot, but, you know, look at what happened to Jesse Winker when he went to Seattle. Not that Teoscar isn't a better all around player. I think he is, and I don't think he'll be that big of a drop off, but there was just no hitters that I felt totally comfortable with at that point in the draft. So I kind of just loaded up on hitters. Like, sure, I love Vinny Pasquantino, but to get into position scarcity, like, I drafted Freddie Freeman in the second round. So I don't feel like I have to spend a seven-round pick on Vinny Pasquantino when I, took Freeman 15th overall. It was just a really, really tough spot for me. And, you know, maybe instead of going Strider in the fourth round, I'll grab another hitter like an Albies or a Kyle Schwarber, even bump up their ADP and then load up on pitchers in rounds like 5 to 8, just because there's really wasn't guys that I was comfortable with. It was a weird spot for me because I still usually am taking hitters at that point.
Yeah, there was probably a run. I want to say like around pick 40 to probably about 66 in my league, where a good 3/4 of the draft board is yellow for pitchers, and it was the names you're mentioning and the hitters that were being taken. We're kind of being pushed up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that you kind of got to wrestle with. So I totally agree with what you're saying. The way my draft kind of worked out, I actually jumped in there with some closers, which we'll talk mm-hmm. about.
I did as well.
It's kind of a new thing for us. We're trying to be more responsible when it comes to the saves category. Well, point well made there, Steve, that if you've got pitchers in the first 1 through 4 rounds, you might be looking at the board. You want to have a plan for it because it does get a little thin and just guys that we're not all that excited about.
Maybe it was just the ball was so dead last year that a lot of these guys don't seem as exciting as they were the year before. There's some weird shapes to the people's seasons. I know Springer was good, but he was hurt a bunch. Bregman really didn't pick it up till like the last third of the season. Jose Abreu, even though he's in an exciting new lineup in Houston, basically had absolutely no power last year. Dansby Swanson's no longer in one of the best lineups of baseball. So there's a lot of flaws in these guys and hitters that go, and pick basically 50 to 100. I will take even more chalk in the first 3 rounds or 4 rounds with hitters and then load up on pitchers.
Well, let's talk about some position players first, Steve, with third base. And that's one that, you know, it's pretty documented that that's a shallow position. Now, I myself did not feel any concern there because I went team six or pick six on the whole KDS. I think my first preference was five, but I got six. Actually went Kyle Tucker, and then on the swing back went Austin Riley. So paired, you know, basically two elite hitters, one offering some speed, the other one covering third base, which is a huge get. Mm-hmm. And even outfield in a five outfielder league is something you got to focus on. So I felt pretty good about that 1-2 combo. How did you go about third base?
So I took essentially my parachute player. I had a third base in my mind basically all the way through until I got one. That happened to be Eugenio Suarez in round 12. That was pick overall, as I look it up, 135. You know, I wanted Bregman. He got sniped a pick before in the seventh round from me. And then, you know, there was really the other one that I was debating, and he went in round 9, was Gunnar Henderson. But it was sort of the same thing that went through my mind with Carroll, or even like, you know, like O'Neill Cruz. It's just how much do you trust this guy that had such a limited sample? I know everything about Gunnar Henderson's skills scream that he's going to be okay, but you know, I've talked about being a bit more conservative and not jumping in on the shiny new toys as much. So yeah. I feel like you could bank sort of, you know, not a great average, but, you know, close to 30 homers for Eugenio Suarez. So I felt somewhat comfortable with him there, but it was like the last option that I wanted. But then I made sure to grab a few guys that were third base eligible, like, you know, as I considered guys for MICI, I wanted to make sure that they had that third base eligibility. So I grabbed Brandon Drury and DJ LeMahieu, who I think are both third base, second base, first base, which is a nice little
insurance policy.
Yeah, that you could slide, you know, from CI, MI, third or first, which is a nice flexibility there. And some insurance. Yeah. If you don't get one of those guys that are, you know, I didn't really care about getting a first baseman per se. I know both those guys have first base eligibility, but I had Freddie Freeman, right? But my weakest point of the roster, I want to make sure that my flex guys have that eligibility just in case things don't go right. I think that's a good thing to keep in mind. Like, you know, you had Austin Riley. I think this might be, you know, your first base. I'm looking at Riley in my draft, but you have Austin Riley, right? You're not going to be as concerned about getting two to three guys that are third base eligibility. You might just want one.
Yeah, exactly. I waited a long while there, and I think Suarez is a good call because after Suarez is Ke'Bryan Hayes, which I want no part of. You mentioned Gunnar Henderson. He went in the seventh round in my draft. So it's a good example of how people get pushed up in that kind of black hole of bats that you want. And there's stuff to like with Suarez. I mean, you were just talking about, you know, Seattle and how it can suppress power. But now we're looking at back-to-back seasons with 31 homers for Suarez. Last year, his 14.8% barrel rate was elite, as always, and it was the highest fly ball rate of his career. You know, his average came up to 236. I think you're okay if you land it like 220.
Sign up for 236 for him. Like, that's, you know, that's bonus. I'm expecting like a 220 average, you know, maybe even like a 215. It might be tough to stomach, but the power should be there, and you know, it's just such a tough position that you kind of have to take your lumps if you're waiting till the 12th round to take your first third baseman.
Totally. And you're not putting too much stock because roster resources kind of given their best shot, but they got Suarez batting third in that lineup, and that's a lineup that's now J-Rod, Ty France, Suarez, Teoscar, Colton Wong, Cal Raleigh. Like, all of a sudden,
it's
the Mariners,
improved. It was pretty good last year, and it's improved, yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm fine with that there. Well, let's shift over to the other corner with first base. Now, for this one, it's kind of a different story. for my squad, I know that you and I have both for a couple of years been on grab one of those top five guys. Mm-hmm. I was able to get Matt Olson in the middle of the fifth round.
Nice. Okay.
Which, you know, I think is a stable pick. I think it's, we kind of came back to reality a little bit last year, but I think we're, you know, you're still pretty confident that he's going to deliver kind of that top 50 overall type of value and deliver a lot of pop.
I didn't put this as my favorite early value, but I think Matt Olson might be my favorite early value. Like, this guy was a second rounder last year, and people were excited at going to Atlanta, being in this new amazing lineup. And I mean, he wasn't horrible, but I don't think he met expectations. Certainly didn't exceed what we thought, especially coming off of that amazing year that he had in 2021 with the A's. So I know I've talked a lot about you know, the first year of a guy being in a new environment and sort of the pressure that takes and the toll that takes just mentally.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would be shocked if he hits 240 again like he did last year. I mean, he still put up a 802 OPS, but in 2021 it was a 911. That K rate that he cut down that was so impressive in 2021 was just 16.8%, jumped back up to 24.3%. It's still not bad. It's not the you know, horrific 31% that he had in the shortened season. You know, it's more in line with his 2018-2019 numbers. But, you know, we've talked about guys pressing in a new environment. Sometimes they're reach rate jumps, which for him it did. His O swing went from 28% to 33% in Atlanta. So, you know, another year being more comfortable in that environment. Like, I'm taking the over on the projection of 249 for him. I think he can be closer to like 260, 270, like he was in 2021.
He gets shifted on a lot as a lefty, Steve. And you know, I was going to say exactly where you went, that we talk a lot about new team, new ballpark, how some players press. We haven't really had that narrative for Olson because he was still so good with 34 homers, 103 RBIs. Like, I think if you can get him around pick 50, like this isn't a bad spot to land with first base, and then you're done worrying about it for a while. So
there's no reason why he can't have another 2021, right? Like,
yeah,
that's within the outcomes of possibility for him. I would not be surprised if he has, you know, closer to a 900 OPS than an 800 OPS this year.
So talk about second base, Steve. This is another one that is kind of perennially shallow, and it's one that you just kind of have to have a plan for. You know, what did you do? Did you see anything that you really wished you kind of would have grabbed this guy at a certain spot?
It's similar to like first base and third base, where like the five first basemen go, or, you know, four first basemen go in the first two rounds with, you know, Vlad Freeman, Alonso, and Goldschmidt, and then, you know, the third base with Ramirez, Devers, Riley, Machado. That takes place in like rounds one to two, but then it's like rounds three to four, it's the second baseman. I kind of want to grab one of them, Altuve, Simeon, Chisholm, and Albies, because mm-hmm. then after that, it was Story, but, you know, that's not going to happen anymore, and then it's like Tommy Edman, Andre Jimenez, Gleyber Torres. So there's a pretty big fall off in my mind from Chisholm to those second basemen in the next tier. And I kind of started off the second baseman run in the third round with the 34th pick in Jose Altuve. In the next five picks, or next 10 picks, Simeon, Albies, and Chisholm all went. And shout out to you. You talked me into Altuve, and I think it's sort of a mirror of what happened with Goldschmidt last year. You know, he had a great year in 2021. The cost just didn't go up too much because of age. Like, you know, Altuve is just sort of this, you know, you could pencil him in for 28 homers and 15 steals with a good average, right? Like, that's just kind of who Jose Altuve is at this point. And for a position that's, you know, I find pretty shallow. Sign me up for that. I hope to be getting a lot more Jose Altuve shares this year.
Yeah, I got in some trouble on this one, Steve. Just missed some second baseman. Altuve went a few picks before me in the front of the third round. That seems to be a trend. And then I was really hoping to grab Andrés Giménez in the middle of the ninth round. He went two picks before me. So I had to go to the bargain bin, and the guy that you've talked about in the past, I haven't been as big on him, really hoping for a rebound, and it is Brandon Lau.
Yeah.
You know, it's deep at that point. You know, it's Lau or it's India. Even Jorge Polanco went before me when I was kind of interested, but this is a spot where I'm in a little bit of trouble. I was able to just kind of back it up with a Jake Cronenworth, which is a nice kind of, you know, multi-position. He can slot in. I think it's first and second.
Yes, for Cronenworth.
So, yeah, a little bit of Matt Olson if there's like an injury. But Brandon Lau, yeah, I mean, he was riddled with injury last season. He had a tricep issue, a couple stints with lower back. But when he's healthy, there's certainly plenty in that bat. In 2021, he had the 39 homer season and batted .247. So I think there's reasons for optimism, but it's definitely not a warm, fuzzy feeling when you see Brandon Lau as your starting second baseman. So I'm not sure if you got anything to add on that, but I kind of got pinched at second.
Yeah, it's kind of the game we played with Olson. Olson was a second rounder in 2022. Like, Brandon Lau is going in the fourth, fifth round heading into last year, coming off of that 39 homer season, where in the second half he really started to hit lefties and hit like close to like 280, I think, which for a guy that you kind of envision more of like the Eugenio Suarez low average, high homer total type, for a guy to have that good at an average over that long a time is impressive. And that led to me being in on him and a lot of other people last year. Obviously, it didn't work out with the injuries, but I think that's a similar pick to Suarez as like a parachute pick for second base. And I think I did it in the pitcherless mock draft too. That was my play. So you're not going to find any argument from me there. I think it's break glass in case of emergency. You need a second baseman.
Yeah.
Take Brandon Lau.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like at that stage, you know, that we're talking the 14th round. So it's not like you're over investing. It's just you look at the board, man. It's like once Chisholm and Edman go off, Story's got the injury, and after Andrés Giménez, it gets into this like mediocrity, really, of like Glaber. You know, Muncy's got plenty of question marks. Polanco, Grissom's interesting. I mean, do you feel like are you going to be in on Vaughn Grissom this year? I know he didn't see a ton. He had the strikeout rate.
The reason why I might be in on Grissom is that he's not costing like what.
Yeah, he cooled off, right?
Yeah, he cooled off a bit. I mean, you know, it is kind of impressive that the Braves felt okay enough to let Dansby Swanson walk with what they had there. Like, you know, it's a good organization. So that's I know that's more soft analysis, but it's a good sign that the Braves sort of trust him to take over that role. And, you know, it doesn't cost what a Gunnar Henderson or a Corbin Carroll cost, right? Like, I don't know where he went in yours, but I'm just looking up mine.
Yeah, he was late 13th round for me. So just
yeah, he went the 17th round for me. So 195, oh, wow. 195 overall. Which yeah,
I'm in like, there.
Yeah, exactly. The cost is right there to take a shot. But you know, like we mentioned before, like, you know, if you have that situation with Brandon Lau, make sure when you are grabbing guys that have multi position eligibility, make sure they got a little 2B next to their name that you could slide in there as sort of a your backup. That's kind of like, you know, the building a bench strategy. Make sure your flex positions cover your weakest areas.
Yeah. Steamer's got him projected out at a .272 average, which would be terrific. You know, kind of a 15-15, maybe even a 20-20 guy. And with that Braves lineup, plenty of upside for Grissom. So another break glass in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. So Let's finish with outfield here, Steve. This was a takeaway for me because I think it's I got caught in the thinking that we've always had that like outfield is deep, and I even knew that people had said like, you know, it's not as deep as you think. And starting with Kyle Tucker for me first round, I just kind of had this
you kind of forget about it,
confidence.
Right?
Yeah. And then I woke up. My next outfielder was in round 10. Stephen Kwan, and I believe you got in.
Yep, that's the same thing as me. I went Alvarez in the first round, so kind of went an autopilot for outfield, and then Stephen Kwan was my next outfielder taken in round 9.
Same boat. So yeah, I mean, it's just it gets thin quickly. Like it's very, you know, top 100. There's plenty of outfielders, but then after that, you kind of wake up and you're like, man, these are guys that you're wish casting a little bit. And mm-hmm. I personally recognize that with Kwan. I mean, obviously that's why I drafted Kwan. And then just two rounds later, I went back in on Anthony Santander as one that I've talked about him a few times. I think the average could come up. He obviously had terrific production last year, actually kind of cooled off a little bit, with the pop in the second half. So I think that, that was my approach to basically be like, I need a solidifier, but I think the biggest takeaway for me was I realized that you do need to be thinking outfield top of mind in your draft, especially mainly if it's a five outfield.
That's a hard bias to overcome because you just can be like, oh, whatever. Outfield is just a filler. Like, oh, I need steals. Like, oh, I'll just take an outfielder later on that has more steals. I need pop. Like, I'll just take a low average 30 homer outfielder hitter. There's not as much flexibility as there has been in years past. And I don't know if I did this intentionally, but after, you know, I went Alvarez in the first round and then waited till round 9, but I then went outfield and Kwan, Taylor Ward and Nick Castellanos to sort of fill out the need all there, just kind of, that's kind of just how it worked. But
those are good names, man. Yeah. I know I went Ward in the pitcherless mock draft, and that's a guy I will definitely have some shares of, a lot to like last year with the barrel rate. A little power speed average at that point in the draft is mm-hmm. pretty rare. But we haven't talked about Castellanos much, Steve. When I was over on Triple Play Fantasy, Art had brought up Castellanos as one of his guys that he's watching. You know, was that just who was on the board, or was that someone that you think you're going to have plenty of this year on a bounce back?
It's kind of, you know, being conscientious of outfield, someone that I think may have fallen a bit too far. I know we've talked kind of about like a disappointments from last year. We've talked about him, you know, but, you know, it just does not look like. Like 13 home runs for him just does not make any sense whatsoever in that hitter ballpark with that good of a lineup around him. It's just looks like it's going to clearly be an outlier. Like, I'm not expecting a 2021 .940 OPS. You know, is Nick Castellanos like a top 2 round hitter? No, I don't think that's the case. But it should look a lot like his, you know, peak years in Detroit, where he had 25 homers with a good average, and come back to, you know, the Nick Castellanos that we loved, like a 34.6% hard hit rate, where the last, you know, 5 years of his career before that, he didn't have anything lower than 40.5%, right? Like, this was the guy, you know, that everyone broke out in the Fangraphs article was the Greek god of hard contact. Hard contact was like the stat of the, you know, du jour. Nick Castellanos was the guy doing it. So,
and he's only 30.
Yeah, he's only 30. You know, it's not like he is this guy that's beat up, or, you know, he's not known for his defense that, you know, run into walls or anything like that. Like, he's not a good defender. He's more almost like a DH type that they kind of just shove in the corner there. But I know he doesn't walk a lot, and reaching, and the O-swing has never been great, and last year was the worst of his career. But, you know, I talked about a bunch, new contract, guys press. I like guys in bounce backs in their second years after big deals once they get acclimated. So I think Castellanos is a nice value this year. So, yeah, I probably will have him on a few more teams.
So let me ask, Steve, looking back, and then we'll wrap on outfield, would you do anything different? I know it came up a little bit of a surprise for me personally, and I tried to recover. Like, to me, it was almost less about the Kwan Santander, but then, you know, a lot of names that I really like, which I'll save one of them because I think we're bringing them up later in the show, they got sniped to where how I rounded out my five outfield is what I'm really having some regrets on with Verdugo and Seth Brown out in Oakland, just not where I wanted to land with outfielders. So from there, I grabbed like a Sal Frelick late, Jose Siri way late, Max Kepler. So I was the rest of the draft, I was kind of thinking like, I don't see these, you know, OF four and five being as good as I wanted them to be. But would you do anything different with your approach, or did it end up working out okay?
Yeah, I think maybe take an OF2 a little bit earlier. Like, I really like Kyle Schwarber. He went to Adam Howe in my draft in the fifth round, the middle of the fifth round. I like Eloy Jimenez. He went to Al in the end of the fifth round. So maybe grab one of those guys there a little bit later. I still like Teoscar, Springer, Brian Reynolds. Those I think could be good plays. So maybe bump up my OF2 a little bit earlier and not necessarily have to go outfield in round 9, 10, 11.
Yep. But if you're shallow, you can always, drive in a deep left field and grab Nick Castellanos. So we will get into some of our favorite value picks and dive in a little bit deeper on some of these guys, but we are going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back. All right, so Steve, getting into kind of the deep dives, if you will, a little bit of inside baseball here, working on the rundown, and you and I both started typing at each other, cracking up, because my favorite early value was Mr. Corey Seager, which I was thrilled to grab at pick 76. At that price, that is in the seventh round. So we know shortstop is deep. There are some options after him, but that's when you get O'Neill Cruz went after him, Xander Bogaerts, Tim Anderson with some injury concerns, Willy Adames. But Seager, I know I'll be kind of preaching to the choir here. For those who kind of missed last year, the power was everything we had hoped for with 33 homers, 91 runs, 83 RBI. He only hit 245, which was abnormal. Hacks and Jacks, I loved Scott Chu the other day. I think it was on last week's show on the shortstop breakdown. Was going on a rant about how this is just not Corey Seager, and he's 100% right. His X average on the pitcherless page was a 285 average above that 245. So 40 points up on that. And, you know, we talked with Christian Mack last year about the ideal plate appearance. Kind of mixes in quality of contact with the plate skills. And Corey Seager was sixth in the league in ideal plate appearance. And that's in part to the plate discipline, just a 15.5% strikeout rate, 8.7% walk rate. You'll take both of those for sure. And then that's alongside having the 24th best hard contact in the league. A lot of stats there, but the idea is Seager is just poised to break out. He already has, really, but I think what you're really hoping for is that he puts it together, right? If he can get that average up to 270, 275, and you still got the pop at like 30, 35 homers, that lineup's also better and better. So I think that Seager's a good one. And talking about shift splits, a couple great tweets that were out there. One from the Fantasy Gospel at Fantasy_Gospel. Corey Seager was one of seven hitters shifted on 90% of the time last year. So Seager is definitely one that pretty much you can count on that helping him. He should benefit as a lefty batter. Another one from Mike Kurland basically just showed that he hit the most liners and grounders out of any player in the league into the shift last season. So a lot is made about the shift. It might not all come to fruition and help players, but Seager should be one that it does help, and that average should come up quite a bit. So I think Corey Seager is a great like back end of that top tier of shortstops. But anything to add on Seager, Steve?
Those are a lot of great people with a lot of great input that do a lot of great research. This is from much dumber me with a lot simpler analysis. But
I like this.
He had a 242 BABIP. He has never had another BABIP lower than 301 for his entire career. So, you know, as unlucky as he can get, he got last year, right? Like, there is just nothing you can do about having a 242 BABIP and a 245 BABIP when, or 245 batting average when the rest of your career you've basically been a 300 hitter. Outside of when he did have that 301 BABIP and he hit just 267. I am going to take the over on his steamer projection of 271. It's just not who he is, especially without the shift. I could see, you know, a 3,300 season coming with, like, you know, a mid 850, 800th OPS rather than the 772 that he had last year. You know, he's shown the ability to take a walk too. It was just 8.7%, but he's had walk rates close to 11.9% in the past. So, I like Seager. I took him at pick 54 in the fourth round, or 58. So even a little bit earlier. But
that's fine. Just, though. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I still like it. It's the lineup's getting better. Texas wants to win. Seager's a big part of that, and I expect big things from him this year, and think it could be a value.
Yeah, I think he could either be an aggressive target, or if he falls to you, it's one of those where it's like, I'll change my plans if he falls mm-hmm. around to me. So that's a quick pick on the draft clock. Talk to me about your kind of early round value pick that you liked, Steve.
Don't have to spend too much time on it. We already hit on him, but Jose Altuve, same sort of thing that I mentioned. It just seems like there's a tax on him for being as old as he is and being around as much as he has been. Maybe the fact that he doesn't steal 30 bases anymore, but he's still a contributor in that category. Like, the floor, I think, for him is kind of like 10 steals, right? He had 18 last year. I know there was a while there in 2021 he only had 5, and then in 2019 he only had 6, but he was only caught one time last year. You know, with the bigger bases, I don't see how that they're going to put like a red light on him, or it'll be like the past few years when you only had a handful of steals. But despite that, even, you know, in 2021 when he didn't really contribute in the stolen base category, he basically contributed everywhere else. Like, you know, he's at worst a 4 category player, but like I said, I can't see less than 10 steals at least with the bigger bases. I know it's hard, especially for an aging player, but everything else Altuve does great. He walks, he doesn't strike out. He had a 164 WRC plus last year. That was the best of his career. That's absolutely insane. Wow. A 921 OPS. Like, I'm not expecting MVP Jose Altuve, but, like, you know, 25 homers, 280. Like, sure, if you want to say the 18 steals are an outlier and, you know, you don't think they'll have it again, but it won't be a zero, right? So, there's a lot to like about Jose Altuve. He is just an all-around player, and I think it's just because, you know, he's going into his age 33 season that there is this slight discount on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like he's going to age gracefully as well. I mean, he's a guy who's typically on the field a lot. Yep. And, you know, is in great shape. So I love it for Altuve. One note for him is that he's getting more and more costly. So, you know, about a month ago when we did the ADP value show, we had him at a 46.
Yeah.
Since December 28th, which is a complete dart throw on that date range, from December 28th till now, it's 37. So he's jumped up about 10 picks already.
Yeah, he's basically firmly a third rounder now, right? So you have to spend the top three pick on him. I got him towards the end of the third round. Maybe I wouldn't be talking about him if I still like him, but maybe not as like a value if that creeps up towards, pick 30, 35, yep. Rather than like 38. Not that it makes too much of a difference. And the fact that you do want to grab a second baseman. So, but yeah, good color by you there.
Yeah. And I guess to shift to the late round guys that we liked our value on, this one's a little interesting for me, Steve. I think I was kind of cheating and going into strategy, but I had a couple handcuffs, if you will, in my format, again, mm-hmm. knowing that there's no free agent grabs. I still can't quit Miguel Vargas, man. I know they brought in JD Martinez. They brought in Miguel Rojas. But I'm with some of the Twitter faithfuls out there who are behind the fact that he's just so good. I think the Dodgers are going to do it. They let Justin Turner go. I think that they're going to find a way for Vargas to play 4 out of 5 games. I grabbed him at pick 259 overall and then kind of did something of a handcuff with Trace Thompson about 200 picks later just to get into the sweepstakes, because right now they have Gavin Lux, Max Muncy, there's Vargas, there's Rojas in the outfield. They got, Outman and Trace Thompson. So they've got a lot of guys that are fighting for like 4 or 5 positions. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Vargas as like the AAA player of the year last year, just 113 games, 17 homers, 16 steals, a 915 OPS, love the plate skills with the 14% walk rate, 15% strikeout rate. He struggled in the MLB, but that was 18 games, mm-hmm. totally willing to throw that out. And I really do just love it. He passes the eye test when I like watch his game, watch his highlights. He has such a natural swing. I'm wish casting again, to use your phrase, Steve, but I could see if he gets, 130 games, which Ross or FanGraphs has him at like a 121 WRC plus. If that's what he's doing, he should get the volume, and I could see something like a 280, 285, 20 plus homers. He's definitely going to chip in on steals as well, but big fan of Vargas, and I'm still happy there. And then my bonus kind of handcuff pairing is I went Hunter Brown a little bit earlier than expected, around like pick 220, but then I followed it up with Jose Urquidy later in case Urquidy gets traded. I'm winning with Hunter Brown, or if Urquidy blocks Hunter Brown, then I've got Urquidy. So I think that was kind of a fun late pitcher double tap there, but those are mine. I'll open it up if you want to chime in on either Vargas or Hunter Brown and Urquidy.
I think the Miguel Rojas news could be a bit of an opportunity. I think maybe people will be, scared off by that, and it'll kind of suppress Miguel Vargas's ADP rather than, if the Dodgers didn't do anything and it seems like he's, the shoe-in for the starting third baseman, his ADP would skyrocket. So I don't hate the news. I think that maybe it'll provide a bit of a buying opportunity and, let the, draft skills not roll. Ron Chandler adage, Vargas has the skills. And I think what you did, especially in draft and hold, I think buying shares of just a good Dodgers team is a good idea. You have Dodger at-bats currently in Vargas and Thompson, which is a good thing to have. Same thing with Brown and Urquidy. Like, you have Astros starters, which is a good thing to do. You can kind of think of that more so in draft and hold than you necessarily have to in a league with daily or weekly moves. So I like that. I think that's good plays, and you don't have to convince me much on Vargas. We've been talking about him since I think maybe the prospect show that we did last off season, or even kind of as like a flyer for call-ups, things to watch out. I know we've definitely mentioned him a bunch on this show. So
I got WAF episode 57.
There you go.
for Vargas. So yeah, like a good 30 weeks ago or something.
Yeah, well, so. Yeah, and we're every other week in the off season, so even further back than that.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
I'll transition into my favorite late value. The transition being that it is also a Dodger, but I grabbed Evan Phillips in round 22, 255 overall. Like, I know roster resource has Daniel Hudson as the closer, but right now, if the season started tomorrow, like, I think Evan Phillips is going to get the most saves. He is the best pitcher in that bullpen. He got saves at the end of the year when, you know, they didn't trust Kimbrel at all. And sure, he might be a high leverage reliever and not necessarily put out in every single save situation, but he's just so good skills wise that, you know, he'll still provide value even if the saves aren't fully there. And, you know, I bought into some closers a bit early in Felix Batista and Hunter and Alex Diaz. As a third closer, a guy with that skills, I'm just betting on him taking the role and running with it for the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers have had, I know Jansen was there a while, but they do like to have a specific ninth inning guy, and I don't see why Evan Phillips can't be that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much sits 96 with the four-seamer, but the slider with the ridiculous 20% swing strike rate. Yeah, you know, 33% K rate. This makes all the sense in the world. And, like, what do you want other than a guy who's potentially closing for the Dodgers when it comes to saves potential? So what spot in the draft was that? Because I think I need to just put that in Sharpie for future drafts.
That was that the 22nd like round, pick 255 overall.
Wow. So that's just pretty much roll uncertainty that's keeping him down.
Yeah, there. I'd imagine his ADP is going to steadily climb, and it kind of is. You know, in the beginning in November, it was around pick 370, and now it's up to around pick 268. So I still grabbed him, I guess, a little earlier, but still.
That's where he went in my draft too. Yeah, Steve, was yeah. 22nd round.
So. Yeah, so maybe I'm missing something. Maybe he's just not going to be the closer. I mean, the Dodgers didn't sign it. Like, the guy looked at the roster resource. Like, yeah, their bullpen's really good. They have, Gratterall, Daniel Hudson's still good, but I mean, Evan Phillips is the best pitcher in that bullpen right now. So I like him for saves if I were a betting man.
Yeah, I like that too. And he's 28 years old. It's not like he's a spring hen. So I feel like if they were going to try to organically have the
claimed off of waivers from the Rays in August 2021. What a pickup by them.
What a surprise. Steve, I know you had mentioned in the show notes, and I have to say it because it was one of the worst snipes of the draft for me. I'm loving myself some Lars Nootbaar, and you actually landed Nootbaar. Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. He was a little bit past he was like my fourth outfielder, so I grabbed him in round 15, 178 overall. I almost want to pass the ball to you, just being, you know, the Cardinals lover that you are, and just, you know, talk about Nootbaar. But there's a lot to like, you know, a 20% strikeout rate with a 12% barrel rate. Like, there is all the makings of a breakout, more so than he even did with his 14 homers and four steals in 108 games last year. I think there's room for improvement. You know, he talked about adding a lot of speed to his swing, working, I think it was driveline that he went to.
You
see him in the batting cage this offseason, like, you know, hitting a pitch and swinging the bat 10 miles an hour faster at a low and inside pitch, and hitting it harder than he ever has before. So, you know, this guy is just a junkie as far as, you know, working on his swing and improving it there. So, I love me some Lars Nootbaar for 2023, and hope to have him everywhere. I think it's a great value. I'll take a look too at Nootbaar to see what his trends are as well. But, you know, I don't know if he is going to be this extreme riser, because, you know, even though the Cardinals did trade Bader, there is there are a few guys out there, right? Like, you would know better than me being plugged into the pulse of Cardinal Nation, but there's still a few mouths to feed out there, right? I know, like, Dickerson's gone too. Nootbaar is penciled in as a starting right fielder, but there's also Alec Burleson. That's Nolan Gorman being on the bench, right? Like, they have
Jordan
that flexibility.
Walker, rumblings.
Jordan Walker too. Edmund can play some outfield, right? I know he's penciled in as a shortstop, but
they
move
the
things
DH.
Around.
Yeah,
yeah, they exactly.
They do. I do. I also think that Nootbaar just. I think he's going to surge, to be honest. I think we're just seeing it's almost like a new player.
Maybe that's me trying altogether. to be hopeful that he doesn't surge. But
well,
yeah,
I know he's a fantasy.
Right.
He's kind of an industry darling. The driveline stuff is salivating. If you guys could just go out and search Twitter, I mean, there's studies. There's people at Driveline who are doing threads on Twitter about you know, him gaining, like you said, 8-10 miles per hour a bat swing. Speed, and he just looks like he is completely locked in. His barrel rate jumped from 4 to 12% last year. He was 14th in the majors in hard hit per swing. And his plate discipline is so
14.7% walk rate. I know Schwebzy, Christopher Weber of Pitcherless in the Deep, like, always would put up, like, stat lines, like, is it Soto or is it Lars Nootbaar, like, you know, with the barrel rate and walk and strikeout numbers all next to each other.
And another thing to note is that, you know, Edmund doesn't walk like that. Like, like, Edmund's not going to have an OBP that's up there. And the reason why Edmund has been a leadoff in addition to the speed is he's also got that switch hitter ability, because the 2-3-4 for the Cardinals, at least how it's stacking up on paper, is righty, righty, righty with Contreras, Goldie, and Arenado, and then you got Nootbaar as a lefty. I think there could be a little bit of I wouldn't be shocked if Nootbaar kind of mixes in with that rotation.
Here's an interesting tidbit. From what position in the lineup did Lars Nootbaar get most of his plate appearances last year?
Was it leadoff or second?
Leadoff. 87 plate appearances. Second was ninth. So, you know, they kind of might do that thing where, you know, hey, it's two leadoff hitters, ninth and first. It's like, for fantasy, that kind of stinks because it's not a leadoff hitter. He's batting ninth. But most of his plate appearances came at leadoff, 20 games there. So,
man, we're finding out who our guys are quickly, Steve. And sadly, some of them we're joining the long line of the industry, but maybe we're near the front of it. So we'll see. Yeah. Let's round out, Steve, with a little bit of a zoom out here on strategies. I know we talked about some big picture stuff in like November, December. We had our New Year's resolutions about how we're going to, you know, what we're going to take in a draft season. So let's, you know, keep the spirit of accountability and just talk about how it's gone so far. Maybe start with something that you feel worked well for you in terms of this draft strategy.
So I know I talked about, you know, hating every hitter that was available in rounds 6 to 10, basically. But that's where I loaded up on pitchers and felt comfortable doing so. Even a little earlier a bit, I guess, pick 45-ish, 50-ish to pick 100. Like, there's a lot of good pitchers there, and I feel that's where I feel pretty comfortable building my staff. I was going to go Brandon Woodruff. He went a pick before me to Mike Carter. So then I went Strider. It was between him, Cease, and Rodon for me. And, like, Cease and Rodon went right after that, but I feel comfortable with any of those guys. I then grabbed sort of the tail end of a closer run, and I grabbed Felix Bautista in round 6, followed by Alex Manoah and Tristan McKenzie. So kind of built out all areas of my staff in that range and felt really good doing so. Like, 1-2-3 of Strider, Manoah, McKenzie, I feel pretty confident in. You know, Strider to provide maybe a little bit less innings than you would like for a number one, but the strikeouts of, you know, I would not be shocked if he led the league in strikeouts, and then that kind of can balance out with more of the inning eater for Alex Manoah. I know, you know, the strikeout numbers weren't great, And then I've talked about it, and I know you've talked about it, and Mendy Mendelsohn from Triple Play Fantasy has talked about how much he likes Tristan McKenzie, so do not hate that there my number three. So I think that's a really good spot to load up on pitchers, and I'm glad it worked out. And you know, building my staff there, I feel really good about it.
Well played. Well, the irony, Steve, is that your strength is my weakness, and my strength is your weakness. So I'm gonna go hit two right here, because I think what I failed at is the Nick Pollock four for floor. And by that phrase, we mean four starting pitchers that you know are going to offer you floor. Part of this, you know, I gotta confess to all of our listeners that I got absolutely crunched at work and the draft rattled off, and I got nicked up with an auto pick in round three with Jacob DeGrom. Now, it's DeGrom.
It's not the worst thing in the world. Yeah, he went round three in this draft, right? Like for me.
Yeah, and I instantly had to, you know, kind of alter my staff, because I was like, if I've already got DeGrom as a volatile ace,
yes,
I wanted to bolster right away. So I got Brandon Woodruff, but right away, everything we've talked about, Steve, on like waiting for starting pitching, hitting that 60 to 120 was kind of out the window, and I had to adjust there. So DeGrom, Woodruff, and then Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell. I had a couple snipes, including Tristan McKenzie, went about five picks before me, as well as George Kirby. So I did not get my floor. I ended up getting a lot of roller coaster type of pitchers, and ended up just, you know, taking shots, you know, at basically how I could backfill from there. But overall, you know, I still think there's a ton of upside with a lot of those names, with Snell, with Glasnow. Woodruff is solid, but DeGrom is, of course, about as risky as it gets. So that was my failing. But then my, on the plus side, was just being mature, which is my New Year's resolution. Being mature when it comes to catchers and closers. Stop falling victim to just the excitement, and actually have a plan to not finish last in saves and dread catcher all year. So I did that in a good way, I feel, because I got I followed the resolution. I got Felix Bautista. I also got Ryan Helsley. So felt really relieved to just not deal with relievers. And for catcher, I followed my own advice of don't be the first one, don't be the last one. I ended up grabbing Cal Raleigh in the 13th round, which I also think really good value. He's another guy that should benefit quite a bit from the splits, or I'm sorry, from the shift rule change. So that helped. I waited a little bit too long after that and ended up doubling up with Andy Rodriguez, which we both like, and Eric Haas, who's kind of a Wins Above Fantasy honorary member, because we're always falling into the Eric Haas safety net, if you will, if we're going to call it a safety net. But Steve, I hit both of those because I think your shortcoming kind of balances out with where I went.
I told myself I wanted a catcher, and I wanted a catcher relatively early. And I failed at doing that. I was the last one, I believe, in the room to draft a catcher. And it was your boy, Yasmani Grandal.
Okay.
Which isn't the worst. My two other catchers are Andy Rodriguez and Bo Naylor, do they have starting jobs? I don't know. Maybe not, Bo not Naylor. Yet. Andy, probably not. I know the Pirates, I forget what catcher they added.
Is it Hedges?
Hedges. So he's blocked already, you know, I'll definitely have to be on the catcher carousel early, which I talked about not wanting to do. Riley was my fallback plan, and, you know, he went in the 13th round, but I probably should have bumped him up a round or two.
But you can make moves. You can make moves in your league, which definitely helps. You know.
Yeah, I like both Contreras brothers. They both went in round nine. Maybe I'll have to dive in there. I know, you know, Wilson's overall numbers didn't look great, but he got off to a super hot start, and you know, being in a much better lineup in St. Louis, and sort of that Cardinal devil magic, like you know, they have to have a good catcher just because Yadi's been there forever. Like, that's going to rub off on Wilson. Contreras, like, I could see him having a really good year there and being a good value in round nine. So I like Contreras a lot. But we'll definitely to just be more conscientious and suck it up and take a catcher a little bit earlier than I would like to. Like, if you don't get more, like, that tail end of Sean Murphy, Tyler Stevenson, Cal Raleigh, you're kind of in trouble. You want one of those guys just because those are, it seems like, the floor to the fantasy relevant guys. I know Danny Jansen was really good in a limited sample, but it seems like it's always been sort of a limited sample for him there. And they also have Alejandro Kirk, although you know, they did find a good amount of ways to get them both in the lineup last year, but I'll bite the bullet in my next draft and take a catcher early, like I've been telling myself I would.
So where'd you end up with closers?
So I kind of hit on it before. Felix Bautista in round 6. Alexis Diaz in round 13.
That's your boy.
Oh, yeah. And then Evan Phillips in 22. So two and a half, I guess, closers, right? You know, paying up for Bautista. I went with him over Williams, Iglesias. You know, Williams' walk rate, despite the amazing skills, kind of scared me off a little bit. I just think Bautista's a little bit better. You know, maybe could have paid up around, like, you know, maybe Presley is a little bit more of a safer veteran type guy. Even like Jordan Romano, I think there was a tweet thread on him about how, you know, reliable he's basically been for 3 years now as a closer. But those are a little bit more costly. I kind of like the sweet spot of Bautista in the sixth. You know, after that, it's kind of like Doval, which, you know, I know he had a good year, but the Giants and Gabe Kapler tend to do a little bit more funkier things in the closer role than, you know, Bautista, where he was just sort of the guy in the ninth inning for the second half on for Baltimore. So a little bit more steady job security there, I think.
Yeah, the mountain, and he's a banter. He's a banter guy on the roster. Yeah, it's great. Well,
before we go, you know, I know I mentioned this, the great chat that I've been in this On the Wire listener league. I mentioned to the group that, you know, hey, I'm going to be talking about this draft tonight, like recording with Van, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's basically just been clamoring. It's like, all right, now that this draft is done, what do we need to do? And it's, you know, everyone's bored in the chat, and like, we just need to draft more. Sean Chard of Fantasy Sports Resource, he's a DFS writer, was like, maybe we just need to do a WAF listener league, who is with me. So I don't know, maybe we'll have to talk off air, and I don't know if we can get on NFBC like On the Wire is, but, you know, maybe we throw together a league with you know, if there's a few other people with Sean there listening, if they're interested. So maybe it'll be.
No, I love where your head's at. I love it, Steve.
A project, yeah.
And if you guys, you know, if you've made it this far into the show, then, you know, you're kind of in this exclusive club where reach out, give us, either one of us, a direct message on Twitter if you would be in some sort of a WAF listener league. And we can work, you know, we're on year 3 of the show, so we got to look at evolving, Steve. I love that idea. And I don't know if we'd have to sort out the logistics of it. But, yeah, let's at least get the feelers out if people would be in on it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we could throw out a tweet there, you know, get some cross-promotion going, see if we can do some interesting things there. We could get a group together and sort of decide, you know, the format, where we want to host it, things like that. So could be a cool idea. I really like it, and shout out to Sean for bringing that up in the chat there. Got a good laugh of it at least, but we'll put it together.
No, love it. And if we don't have a listener league, we at least have our loyal listeners. So thank you guys for tuning in to episode 84. We'll be off next week. I'll be down in Cancun. I'll take a nice little break there, Steve. Might have to picks coming up.
This is nice for you. You know, once you come back from this trip, like, it's that much closer. Like, we'll be right, February will be right around the corner, and it'll be right in the thick of things. So it's a nice, well-timed vacation for you.
Yep. Can't wait for everything that's ahead. It's going to be a great year three for the show. So thank you guys for tuning in. Housekeeping, as always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsBovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav88818. You guys can catch us week after next on Friday, and hopefully we will have a special guest on to talk about some redraft prospects. Get out in front of the line for some of the rising young talent. So super excited, but thanks as always for tuning in. And hopefully you have some lucky draft rooms in the days to come. But until next time, guys, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.